Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. Today, we're going to be talking to Bal, who, you may have heard of it, works at a place called Quantic Dream in France.
I thought that was Quantum Dream.
Quantum? Is it Quantum or Quantic?
It's Quantic, actually.
Okay, Quantic Dream, just in case anybody during the episode hears somebody say it otherwise. But regardless, we're also going to be talking to him about some little rodents that live with him.
Gross. You know what? Bal is a well-established mapper in the Quake scene. He's been mapping off and on for Quake for 20 years. But, oddly enough, he only has one single player Quake. Well, no, that's not true. He has one recent single player Quake release, and we're going to get into all that. He's also an award-winning Quake map designer. We'll get into that as well.
But first, before we get into that, I want to let everybody know that on my YouTube channel, I have a giveaway going on for the month of December here in 2018.
Tell me more.
Oh, I will. If you'd like to get in on this giveaway, all you have to do is go to my channel, find the giveaway video, which was just recently released, and all you have to do is comment on the video and subscribe to my channel, and you are in the giveaway. You can win all kinds of cool stuff. Even you, Dump Truck, can get in on this.
You mean I can be a winner?
That's right. Even Dump Truck can be a winner. And if Dump Truck can be a winner, anybody can. So get there and join.
Exactly. I guess it was probably when it came out. I discovered the shareware online. I was already playing like first-person shooters. I was playing mostly Duke Nukem at the time, and I picked up the Quake shareware on a CD or something, and I guess that was it basically, because it was so great and so different from previous first-person shooters. The 3D element, the real 3D element, like it kicked in right away for me, and it really grabbed me. The room over room stuff and just the architecture, which was a lot more interesting than in previous games. That was definitely something that grabbed me. And so, yeah, that's how I discovered it.
And you were mapping already at that point, correct? You were mapping for Rise of the Triad and Duke.
Yeah, I got a PC when I was like 14 or something, and I got a few games for it. One of them was Rise of the Triad. And there was an editor in some CD or something I think a friend gave me, and so I started making maps for that, which was really limited, obviously. And then later on, Duke Nukem came out, and I did quite a few maps for that. I never released anything. Actually, I think maybe I did release like a Duke Nukem map on some CompuServe, like Duke Nukem forum, or I don't know what. I tried to look for it once, but I never found it again. Mm-hmm. So I was already mapping at that time, but nothing released. It's really Quake that got me into it seriously.
Jeez, CompuServe, that's something I haven't thought about in ages.
Wow.
It's just like you said that, and I just kind of blanked for a second, like, oh, right.
what is CompuServe?
What was that?
Yeah. It was like really cool. AOL and CompuServe at the time. I was in the US, so the big ISPs, and just like downloading maps and stuff on there.
Yeah, we should mention too, at the time you were in the US, but you're actually French native, correct?
Yeah. So I'm born in France, but I just like lived in Detroit, Michigan, from 5 to 11. And then I went back to France, and then I went back to the US for 1 year in Cincinnati, Ohio. Then I came back for France for good.
Wow.
But you're living in my neck of the woods, because I'm actually in Michigan here. So that's pretty cool.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I didn't know you were from there.
Yeah, and as we call it, because we like to pretend we're, classic and classy in French, we sometimes refer to it as détroit.
Détroit, so. Yes.
I took a look at your level profile over on, Quake 3 maps over on level.
Yeah.
And you obviously have done a tremendous amount of multiplayer work and Quake 3. So what grabbed you about Quake 3? And then I think RC has a follow-up question to that.
So Quake 3, I wouldn't say it grabbed me, actually. I was already making lots of deathmatch maps for Quake at the time. I passed over Quake 2 because the multiplayer wasn't really something I enjoyed. So I think most of the big Quake 1 deathmatch mappers kind of skipped Quake 2. But quite a few of them moved on to Quake 3 since it was multiplayer focused. So it made sense to move on to Quake 3. I still kind of preferred Quake 1 even at the time, but Quake 3 was just the cool thing to do, and it was nice to have all the new tech, the curves, the shaders. It opened up lots of possibilities, and a lot of people were playing it, so making maps for it was pretty fun because you know people would play your maps. So that's really what got me into it.
Right, the infrastructure to have the map screenshot in the UI and all that stuff was such a jump, as I recall, back in the day. And it was kind of irresistible to do that. Now the million-dollar question, this isn't the follow-up, but when Trench Broom has support for Quake 3, do you think you might dip the toe back into the Quake 3 world? Because I'm certainly planning on it.
Well, I think 2 years ago, before I got back into Quake, I actually did port all my Quake 3 maps to Quake Live, because I think Vondur did it, or wait, was it Vondur? Yeah, I think it was Vondur. He did it, like on the Steam Workshop and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw him doing that, I thought, hey, I could do this too. So I did convert all my Quake 3 maps to Quake Live, which isn't saying much because it's basically the same game. I don't know if there's enough people still playing it to warrant me like getting back into it. I don't know, since I haven't been playing much multiplayer recently. I don't know. Maybe if as a collab with someone or something, that sure, could be interesting. Yeah. But
well,
for now,
it's not a request. You know, you could do what you want.
He's not trying to pressure you into it, I don't think. Are you done, Truck?
No, not at all. Why don't you go ahead and kind of, if you want to dig deeper on that other question we discussed earlier.
Well, sure. And just to touch on what he was saying just now, like multiplayer is definitely an interesting thing nowadays, because with these older games, it seems like the single player side of Quake 1 is thriving. But, you know, I think all the multiplayer servers are still just running the same old maps. And if you try to introduce something new, people are kind of like, you know. But what I wanted to ask you, though, was you did Quake 1, you did Quake 3. Where are the Quake 2 maps?
Oh, yeah. That's as I said earlier, since I really didn't like the Quake 2 deathmatch, and at the time I was only making deathmatch maps, so it seemed like an obvious thing to just skip it. Also, when I first got Quake 2, I had a really shitty computer, and it didn't run really well on it. So I remember, I think I played Quake 2 the first time with like the super low def mode with like no color lighting or anything. It was really quite ugly. So yeah, I don't know. It felt really slow. And what I loved about Quake 1 was the speed of the deathmatch. And Quake 3 was actually kind of faster than Quake 2, so it was kind of in the middle. So it felt okay to move on to that. But Quake 2, yeah, it didn't really grab me.
No, it makes sense. Yeah, the death match between all three games definitely feels different. But, you know, Quake 3 definitely feels a lot more like Quake 1 in the sense of speed and that kind of thing. So I can understand what you mean.
Yeah, definitely.
So now you were making multiplayer maps, so, and now you're focusing on single player. Is that, besides kind of the obvious that there's more people playing SP at the moment, or it seems, you know, seems like that way to the casual observer, but so now, do you enjoy single players? Is something that you've got a new kind of renewed interest in, or is it still kind of new to you?
Well, it's at the time when I started mapping, the thing was really making deathmatch maps. Most of the mappers were making deathmatch maps, and there weren't that many single player releases. So now, obviously, that has changed, as you said. At least to me, it feels like it has changed. I really like the single player. I liked it. I started liking it when I worked on Nahara. And recently, playing all the new maps, it really got me back into it, and I enjoy it a lot more than I did back in the day. Even though I already did enjoy it back in the day, but now I just love like playing all the new maps mostly.
How did you get involved in working on Nahara? Now, were you part of the official release, or were there third-party things later down the line?
No, I was part of the main team, yeah. Mindcrime basically had the mod up and running. Like, he made most of it, most of the code and most of the models and stuff. He had everything ready, the story, and he basically came at us, like a few of the mappers in the community, and he like, here, I have all this. You want to make something with it? And I mean, obviously, that's the best way to get a project rolling, is to come in and already have lots of stuff to show the people. So when you showed it to us, we were like, yeah, this is cool. Let's try to do something. And that's basically how it happened. And then we worked on it. I don't remember how long it lasted. I think probably a year or so.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty long, and it was very chaotic, but it was also like Mindcrime wasn't really like giving us any directions or anything. It was like, guys, I have all this, make some maps and we'll fit them together. And if you need anything, just tell me and I'll make it. And that's basically what happened.
Oh, pretty loose then.
Yeah, it was really open. I mean, you can feel it in the mod, I think. It's pretty uneven and it's pretty chaotic, but at least it finished. At least we finished. That's the most important, I think.
Well, to this day, I still hear a lot of people talk about that mod, and I would say it's probably monthly I get a request to play through it, so I really got to play through it on my channel sometime.
Have you never played it, Narcy?
No, I haven't. The way things go on the channel is like I try to not play maps unless it's for the channel, because everybody constantly comments about how much they like when I blind play through stuff, so I'm like, oh, I got to wait until I play it and people can see my reaction, so... But it's definitely in the pipeline. It's just there's so many new maps coming out. I haven't been able to fit it in.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Since I've been mapping Ghent for like a bit more than a year, I have so much stuff to catch up on. And each time I'm talking about ideas on Discord and stuff, people are always mentioning, "Oh yeah, like in this map jam or like in this map." I'm like, "Ugh, I haven't played this." And I'm looking on Quiddicted. I'm like, "Whoa, this looks awesome!" And it's like every day I'm discovering old maps that I've never played. I'm just like, I think I have this cool new idea, but no, like 20 people have already done this. So it's pretty cool.
It's really weird. Yeah, whenever you go on Quiddicted, you just kind of thumb through. There's always like a brand new classic you found that, you know, only a few people had played. You know, you rediscover it, tell people about it, and they're like, oh, wow, I never heard of this one, which is really, really cool. But yeah, it's interesting that you say also that, you know, if you thumb through and see that, oh, this has been done maybe like 10 years ago by a few other people. So that's kind of cool, though.
But yeah, it's really nice. But yeah, if you do play Nahara, I'll be curious to see that. It's aged weirdly, like this.
I played it when it was released, but I didn't finish it. I'm not a completionist, and I got to be honest with you, the cutscenes drove me out of my mind. I couldn't hang with them. So, I've and this is years ago, obviously. So I might as well have never played it. So I need to jump back into mea culpa here. So let's hear about your experience making the map, because that was for the Christmas Jam, and I know you're working on Christmas Jam for this year as well.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about A Warm Welcome Home.
I don't remember exactly what happened to get me back into it. The event seemed interesting because the size limit. I thought like, oh cool, I can just make a small map. My idea was to like have a surprise map and like, hey guys, look, I made a quake map after 15 years. So that was my idea, and I really didn't think it would go any further than that. I thought I'd just like whip out some simple map in a couple weeks, never talk about it to anyone, and just send it to Nekke, to have it in the pack and have it be a surprise. But it ends up I got really sucked in, and I loved making it. So yeah, Trench Boom was a big factor. Just the tool is exactly what I wanted while mapping, so it felt great, and making the map felt great. So even before I finished that map, I already had like two or three other maps started. So I was back in addicted again, I guess.
I was talking to RC earlier, and I said I wanted to give you a hard time about your releases, because you tantalize the community with these amazing screenshots, and I'm talking about mainly the DM4 jam stuff. But we give Bal a hard time about his trim. Like he's a trim fiend, and you make very nice trim textures for everyone to utilize. But But yeah, I almost wanted to do an intervention with you and say, listen, we were going to interview you, but this is actually very serious business here. You've got a problem. We need to fix that.
You know, actually just this afternoon, I was like thinking about the interview, about this interview, and I was like, damn, actually they're going to interview me, but I've only released one map in the last year. I haven't released anything. It's like before you've interviewed Ionis, who like has, I don't know how many maps he has. He has so many.
I think he's got 5 or 6 this year.
It's amazing. And I have like 0 this year.
You have some nice screenshots though.
Yeah, I have lots of nice screenshots. But so yeah, I'm a bit ashamed, I admit. I have like 4 maps that are coming to completion, basically. Wow. So obviously the Xmas map, I was packaging it earlier today, and I'm sending it over. So that's done. And then I have a few other projects. So I'm hoping that early 2019, I'll be able to release at least one map, probably 2. I'll see how that goes.
I do want to say that you also really do contribute to the community a tremendous amount, because I'm on the Quake Mapping Discord, you know, way too much. And you're on there helping people and commenting and making a giant contribution. So I wouldn't worry about your map releases. You're doing great. So
I like sticking around the Discord. I like talking about Quake, and I like talking about like mapping specifically, and just like technical problems and just like the engine, and like I like this old Quake engine. It's full of charm, and it has its all its little problems. I love even those, and finding ways to get around them. That's really interesting to me.
That's very cool, though. I was going to say, you could even take the approach where if you want to only release an Xmas Jam map every year, maybe that's your thing.
Yeah, that might be cool. Yeah. No, hopefully I'll have some other releases.
Yeah, I hope you do too, because I got to say, playing your Xmas Jam map last year on stream, I was just like, oh my God, this is such a cool map. And it actually starts out the pack, because I usually play the jams in order of everybody's name alphabetically. So yours pops up first and we play it. And I'm like, oh my God, this is in, you know, the box that was supposed to be contained. Because what was the exact size of the box supposed to be?
It was a 1,024.
1,024. So yeah. This cube. And you created this ever-changing level that like you go up and then down and then back up, you know, and then as you're doing these things, the style of the map just completely changes each time you're going through it. And it's just, in my opinion, it was like a pretty brilliant idea to, you know, use this very limited space. And when I was playing it, I don't remember what I said at the end of it, but I remember thinking, though, that I'm just like, wow, like this is the start of the jam and it's already this good. Like, I don't know where it's going to go from here, you know?
It was downhill from that point.
No, that's not true.
I'm kidding.
Not
I'm
at all.
Joking. I'm joking. No, but I will say, I'm looking at screenshots right now, just reviewing this, and I remember playing it, and I will say it doesn't feel like a 1024 map. It really doesn't. There's so
it
much
doesn't, no.
Going
well,
on.
I mean, let's be honest. I'm kind of cheating. I mean, I'm kind of pushing the box on each side. I'm definitely taking the theme more as a general philosophy of how to build the map than an actual hard constraint. And it's even more so the case in this year's map. Hopefully people don't hate me too much for that, but
I told him the other day, RC, that I'm going to use his screenshot from that map as a desktop for my next video, because it is just really stunning. It's really cool.
Thanks.
So do you want to talk about that map? Or you want to, because people will, you know, it'll be released by the time we're live with this episode.
So yeah, it's, I actually, once again, I had lots of other projects to do when I started this map. So I was thinking, okay, Xmas map, I'll make another map for this event, but I'm gonna make something really small and something really quick. Obviously that didn't work out. So I made something pretty dense and very detailed. It's quite different in style to last year's map, at least visually. But I think for gameplay, it's actually kind of similar. I'm kind of doing the same things. So hopefully that's not too stale compared to my map from last year. But yeah, Well, it'll be out soon. I hope it has a good reception. I'm curious to see what people think.
Well, if it's anything like last year's map, man, I don't think you have anything to worry about for sure.
Yeah, well, it's... I mean, the pack this year looks pretty cool. There are lots of really good maps in it. The ones I've tested already are really great and all very different, which was already the case last year. But I feel the level is even higher this year, which is it's pretty great. You see a lot of people that are just like evolving and really like finding their style, and even newcomers. It's really great to see the new maps.
And that's my favorite thing about the community. I talk about that on a lot of my different shows, is playing people's maps who just started in the community when I came back, or you know, people who have just started while I've been doing the show, and seeing how they've changed and how they've evolved. Because I've seen several people go from like first map to fourth map, and the fourth map is just like this worlds away amazing map from their first one. It's so cool to see that evolution.
Yeah, it is. It's great. People are really, really making great stuff for this game compared to like what there was back in the day. It's amazing. As I was saying, just looking on around Quidicted, I'm always amazed by the quality of the stuff that's being released. But one of the things I didn't mention that got me back into Quake was actually compared to my job, what I really find enjoyable is that at work we work on a project for like 5 years without ever being able to show it to anyone. So it's really tough to like make a project that long and then hope that people are going to like it. And so one of the things that got me back into Quake is how immediate it is. So like you can make a map and you release it, and then like a couple days later you can see like people like RC and stuff playing it and streaming it or sending demos. And that's really something that I love about the game. Just this kind of feedback that you get right away. It's really great. And that's what keeps me going. People playing the maps and people like talking about the screenshots and stuff like that. Obviously, I'm saying that, and then I'm not releasing any maps, so
yeah, that kind of sucks. You're killing me, man. Yeah. You're killing me with this.
Well, so, you get the feedback when you release those screenshots, though. People are like, oh, this is beautiful.
Yeah, but that's different.
No, and RC and I have talked about getting feedback, and it does kind of keep you going, because when I do, you know, the last video I did, I'm doing these texturing videos, and I can barely, you know, I barely know what I'm talking about, but I think I'm helping some people, and that makes it worth it. But to get the feedback, like, keep them coming. Great. This helps so much. This is what I was waiting for. It really motivates you to do it. You know, okay, I'll stay up late tomorrow night working on a different one. And so that instant feedback, you know, and play testing as well. You know, I'm sure I know you have your group of people play testing. I'm assuming. Pretty sure you do.
Actually, I actually try to change them around each time.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
I think for my Xmas jam this year, I think I only have one tester in common from last year.
Okay.
I think it feels healthy to try to like try different people. I don't like to like publicly post the map and like hope people will send feedback. I do like try to contact specific people and make sure that they have like the time to really test it and really give some feedback. But yeah, I think it's interesting to try to change people and contact people that you, even people that I would be like kind of unsure about. Like this year, I had a Scarecrow test my map. And I haven't told him this, so I guess he'll hear it on the podcast maybe. But I was kind of scared to show it to him because he's really critical, because that's his job. And so
right.
I was really on the fence to send it to him, but yeah, it turned out he had lots of cool things to say, and it was really helpful. And then yeah, I think that's a good thing to do, change testers regularly.
Nice.
No, that's smart. Yeah, going out on a limb and trying to get somebody that you haven't worked with before, sometimes you get that whole other perspective you probably wouldn't have even thought about.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and honestly, I haven't, and it probably shows in my maps. I usually just have my kids play test, but that's kind of been my folly though, because and RC, you probably remember this. I had that one map where I had a button for to get into the rocket launcher, and it was just too dark. And you know, I spent all this time on this map, and that one stupid thing really kind of screwed up. It didn't ruin the map because you guys were able to finish it, but I was kicking myself going, yeah, if I had just opened this up to a couple more people other than my kids who kind of are familiar with the project. So lesson learned there, but
you can never get around this. the second you release a map, there's always going to be one thing that all the testers missed. It's yeah. It's always like that.
So tell us about this new map, where the idea came from, because it's more of a castle, a much different feel than the other one. Did you just want to go 180 degrees from the more base stuff that you did last year, or kind of what inspired you basically to go in this direction?
So yeah, as I said, I didn't really plan to make it a complicated map. I wanted to do something really simple. So what I did was I took the textures I was using in that, I don't know if you guys have seen it, it's like this tower map that's like floating in the sky, which is using like Daikatana textures. I just started working with the
unreleased maps?
Yeah, it's an unreleased map. It's actually a map from Nihara Episode 4, which was never finished.
Oh, okay.
Nice. And so yeah, I used those textures thinking that I would just make something quickly. And it just got out of control. And I'm like, yeah, okay, Daikatana has some village-type textures, so I could make a small village at the top. And I'm like, but I guess I could make a village around it as well that people would just see in the distance. And I just got carried away. So it wasn't really planned at all. Most of my mapping is pretty improvised. These days, I'm trying to plan stuff out a bit more, but... usually it's pretty improvised.
And RC, I will say, and for the audience as well, I watched a couple streams that Bal did on yet another project that's still kind of in the works, that it's more of a space map. You know what I'm talking about.
But yeah.
And you know, watching you map is really educational for me, because you're really fast. So kind of you're the exact opposite of other people. You rip through and you make all this geometry, and then you're iterating, and then you're like, oh, no, that doesn't work. I'm going to redo it. So it's kind of hard to pick up what you're doing sometimes, but it is really cool. And my mouth was watering looking at that map, just going, oh my God, this looks very cool. So I hopefully you can make all these within the next few months, kind of. Appear. I don't know what your timetable is, but we've got a lot of Bal to look forward to. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that flying base map, which is Doom 3 textured, is definitely the one that's the most finished. So initially, I was hoping to finish it this year, but then I started working on this other project, which is still really early days, but it's kind of slowing me down. So I'll probably release it at the start of next year, hopefully. But yeah, it's almost done.
Cool, cool, cool.
And same.
I think
for...
I hear dump truck drilling again.
And it's actually the same for the DM4 map. I'm ashamed I didn't finish that one yet, but it's like, it's almost done.
Just now, listen. I know what you need to do. Just give it to MFX.
Yeah, I think MFX is really busy with some crazy projects as well at the moment, considering the last screenshots he posted.
Yeah, that was pretty astounding. We'll hopefully get him on here one day.
So we kind of covered a lot of the Quake stuff already. We covered, you know, what you did back in the day versus what you're doing now. But there was a time where you took a break, and as you put it, you stopped mapping to get your life together. So what was going on back then?
So basically, I was really into Quake 3, like, in my high school years while I was in France. So I wasn't really doing very well at school. I messed up my end-of-the-year exams a few times, mostly because I was mapping and just, like, gaming and doing other stuff. So I kind of set it all aside, because it didn't seem like I could really do anything with mapping job-wise. It didn't really seem... like something that I could exploit in France, at least professionally. So I decided to get more into traditional art and digital art. I had a phase where I was really into manga and anime and stuff at the time. So I was drawing lots of that, and I went to art school. And then actually, that seemed also kind of hard to find work in. At one point, I almost wanted to become maybe a comic artist or something like that, but it seemed like such hell to find work there.
Right.
So I actually ended up coming back to games, and I did like a school to learn 3D art, which I ended up mostly learning by myself online. So yeah, that's how I got into like 3D art. So like the big 3D editors and sculpting and ZBrush and stuff like that. And that's what got me into the games industry afterwards.
Very cool. So you went to school, learned 3D art, and you got into the game industry. Looks like you said about 2007 you got in as an environment artist.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I was doing it was this like tiny kind of small company in Paris that was doing massive multiplayer online games, none of which really worked out. It was a weird experience. They had a lot of money, but they didn't really know what they were doing. But it was a cool team, and I learned a lot there. And so when I left there, I went on to work at Ubisoft, where I worked on some Ghost Recon game. That was my first experience with modern game engines and stuff, and it was pretty interesting. But the process of making games at Ubisoft is kind of weird because they have so much money and such high expectations of the projects that at any time they can just decide to okay, this isn't working out. You guys have been working on this for 1 year, but this is not what we want. So we're trashing it all and we're starting over. So that's what happened on the Ghost Recon game I was working on.
Wow.
And
that's huge.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. So since I was on a fixed contract, we were lots of artists that they just they let us go because they had to like reboot the project. So it's like, okay, you guys, you're going to be leaving in 3 months. Maybe we'll contact you again in 6 months and see if you want to come back. So yeah, at that time I just left, and I had a friend working at this company in Paris called Quantic Dream.
And oh yeah.
He was we're looking for people. You want to meet my boss? And so I went there with my environment work, and in my portfolio I also had a bit of robot models and a bit of character work. And the guy's like, okay, well, I don't really care about your environment work, but your character work is cool, and we have to make robots in the next game, so do you want to work with us? And so that's how I got hired at Quantic Dream, and that's where I've been since. So it's been 8 years, I think, now, 8 or 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a fantastic run in this day and age. That's really great.
Yeah, the company treats me pretty well, and the team, the character team, is really, really great. Lots of people that I really love there, so that's why I've been sticking around mostly, because the projects are interesting. I mean, the games, but I mean, they're not really the type of games I enjoy that much. I mean, basically, they're the polar opposite of Quake. They're like a story-driven adventure games with a very little pure gameplay. So that's the opposite of Quake, basically. And I think that's cool that these kind of games exist, but it's definitely not what I enjoy the most. But making them is really interesting, especially with the people that work there.
Yeah, I want to ask about the difference in your process. Well, first of all, tell me because I don't know any character artist in the games industry. What, tell me kind of your kind of workflow or a day a typical day at the office, and then maybe as a follow-up, can I kind of tell me how the skills that you use at work translate into BSP, mapping, low poly mapping.
Yeah. Well, my work at Quantic Dream has changed a lot since I'm there, because as the years go by, obviously I've been doing more and more management and less actual artistic work, unfortunately sometimes, but it's also interesting. But yeah, basically it's the same workflow in most of the industry. We have 2D artists who make character designs. At Quantic Dream, since we're very focused on photorealistic stuff, we also then do a casting to get actors and stuff, and we bring them in, and we take photos of them, and we have some tech to scan their faces in 3D. And so we use all that to make the characters. So we're using a mix of scan data and then sculpting to get the fine details of their faces to really build digital doubles of the actors. So yeah, that's mostly what we're doing. So it's lots of sculpting, lots of modeling in Maya, and then lots of shader work to do the clothes and the skin and stuff like that.
Right, and the pretty sophisticated mocap as well. I mean, I know that's industry-wide, but it seems like it's a real huge focus of that company. So that's pretty wild.
Yeah, we're like the only company in Paris that has a mocap stage. So yeah, we're like pretty focused on it. So
nice.
That's really cool. And I remember hearing about the face capturing stuff that you guys were doing over there ever since back when it was introduced. It's pretty advanced stuff. Did that start on what, like Heavy Rain, or is that Beyond Two Souls?
It started on Heavy Rain. They were already doing it a bit before. So I started working there when Heavy Rain finished. So I did Beyond Two Souls in Detroit. But yeah, I guess it was one of the first game companies that was pushing hard for that kind of stuff, since we were really making story-driven games with actors.
Yeah, because I remember around the time Rockstar released their noir game. Was it L.A. Noir?
Yeah, L.A. Noir.
Yeah, so they were sort of coming from the same idea that where they wanted the faces to be completely realistic so you could read them while you were questioning them. But I remember playing Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls back when they released, and I remember being so impressed with just the facial expressions when people were talking and everything. So I think it's one thing that's definitely paid off for the company for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely something we focused on. I think that nowadays... most companies have caught up with us. everybody's doing it, basically. Everybody's doing story-driven stuff. Even like Call of Duty has like amazing cutscenes and stuff like that. So it's really become popular. I mean, it's obvious now that the computers can like do it. Everybody's interested in doing it. So yeah, it was interesting to be there when it started.
That's one of the things that drives me kind of nuts about video games in general, is that and this isn't everyone that does it, but a lot of these higher ups wanted to make movies and they're doing games, and it's just so clear when you see like, oh, I'm going to be this cineast and this director and everything, and there's right. there's a place for cutscenes and all that I'm not arguing against that. It just kind of drives me nuts when there's so much of an I know with Quantic Dreams it's a little different because that's the game play. But
yeah,
I mean, like Call of Duty, it's like, I just want to blow stuff up. You know, why do I have to sit and watch a 5 minute or 6-10 minute cutscene? It's because someone wants to tell a story. But I mean, the story is boom, boom, you're dead. That's the story.
Yeah, I guess
I'm more of an arcade guy. You know, I'm much more arcade, like a shallow arcade experience.
Yeah, so am I, definitely. But that's what I like about Quantic Dream, is that at least, I mean, we know what we're doing for this. It's a movie. I mean, it's an interactive movie, and that's what we're doing, and we're okay with that. And people seem to enjoy it. But yeah, it's weird because lots of these modern projects end up being like half and half, and you don't really know what they want. But it's funny because when you think about it, this is the same complaint you had for Nihara, and so basically this is. I mean, Mindcrime was the same. Mindcrime had a like vision as a director and as a storyteller. So I'm not surprised that many people like tend to try to do that kind of stuff. It makes sense, but yeah, it's unfortunate because games aren't always like the best place to do that.
Right. I mean, I think when you Hideo Kojima, that it's a little different. You kind of go in knowing that it's going to be over the top and crazy, and it's mostly entertaining when it happens in those games. So I mean, I kind of give people a pass. I just think it's it's funny. And it's funny because I went to film school, and you know, I wanted to make movies since I was 11 years old. So I'm an editor now, so I make little tiny movies, like 30-second movies every week. That's the way I like to think about it. But but I mean, there is a place for it, and people do enjoy it. And I do want to bring something up with Beyond Two Souls and Detroit Become Human, because just from the marketing perspective, and I know you don't have any really thing to do with that, but I'm in marketing, so I will say that the trailer for Become Human was so fantastic. It really, I almost, you know, again, this not my kind of movie, not my kind of game, but man, I was so close to a purchase after seeing that trailer. And I mean, the second E3 it was at, not the first year. I think they really hit it hard at the second E3, right?
We had a trailer for each, yeah.
Right.
And yeah, they were pretty good.
Yeah, they were them. They were well done, and they kind of like, as opposed to Beyond Two, Two Souls, they that was much more of a like, hey, this is an interactive movie, and they were all in, and it felt like a movie trailer. What the newer stuff, at E3 for Become Human was just felt like it was doing the gameplay justice. And
yeah.
It was a really conscious decision, obviously.
Yeah, so, we were definitely trying to show how it played more for that game.
Cool.
But it's pretty interesting because I mean it's nice to see that people react positively to the trailers because oftentimes people think like these companies like they're big companies and like they have like the dedicated teams making the trailers and like marketing like endless marketing teams and there is some of that because we're like working with Sony. But Quantic Dream is also independent. I mean, we have a like close ties with Sony, but it's also we're still an independent company, and so it ends up that you know, the people in the company are the ones actually doing the marketing stuff, like making the art and making the trailers. And I know that for one of the trailers, even like one of the bosses was like basically doing the trailer. So it's pretty funny because it's not actually marketing teams. It's like most of the marketing images for Detroit, like we were doing it in the character team, like Sony would ask us to do stuff and we would like send them images and then we'd just like discovering how they use it. But it's really weird. Yeah.
That's cool. That's actually something I would never have known. So that's what a great facet to all this. That's very cool.
It stays very, how do you say it? In French, I'd say artisanal, which is like,
Hands-on, kind of.
It still feels kind of like we're kind of doing stuff as we go and improvising and like, okay, we need to make a trailer. Like, who knows how to like cut a movie together? And it's like just right. Find someone. So that's something I like. It's a big company, but it still has like a feel where you can like move around in it and do different stuff, and you're not just like sitting at your desk and doing one specific job, which is nice.
I've actually been following Quantum Dream for a long time. They had a little game come out. I'm actually looking on the wiki right now. Came out back in 2005. It was called Fahrenheit over there, but over here it was called Indigo Prophecy.
Yeah.
I absolutely adored that game, and it was the first game I played that took the idea of a point-and-click adventure and made it into a game. And I totally side with what you guys were saying just a couple minutes before about how, you know, gameplay is gameplay, but a story is a story, and melding the two is an incredibly hard thing to do in games. Because it's one of those things where, you know, am I going to have something like Metal Gear Solid, you know, where I have like a half hour video I'm watching, or am I going to have like a Call of Duty thing where they show these guys talking for about a minute and then I'm in the action, you know? So it's a really hard balance to strike. But I found with the Quantum Dream games that they hit a chord with me just because it was like, man, I don't know where this story's going. I don't know how crazy this is going to get. And it always ends up getting pretty crazy. And that's what I like about it. I like seeing the turns unfold and everything and having something to do with that. Heavy Rain was especially in that vein for me because it was about the serial killer, right? What was he called? The Origami Killer or something?
The Origami Killer.
Yeah. So when that was all unfolding and everything was happening throughout the game, I was just like, oh my God, this just keeps getting crazier and crazier. And Beyond Two Souls was the same way. And I'm hoping to get the chance to play Detroit soon too, to see how that unfolds. But it's interesting to hear you talk about that, you know, these games aren't really your favorite to play. Do you still play them after you finish working on them, like Beyond Two Souls and Detroit?
No. I did watch my wife play Detroit, which was fun.
Okay.
but during production, like during the end of production especially, we're basically playing the game all day. We're always like testing our characters right. and situation, and since there's so much bending and so much different possibilities, we can't really expect the testing teams, the QA, to find all the graphical issues. So in my team, we're spending a lot of time like playing the games and all the different situations and like taking screenshots and saying, so if you do this and this and then you kill this guy and then you say this to that guy, the character looks wrong on this frame, so we have to fix
right.
it. So we play it a lot. So by the end of by the time the game is out, it's like, ugh, no, I can't, not anymore.
That is pretty funny. How did your wife take the game? Did she enjoy it?
Yeah, she really liked it. I was pleasantly surprised.
Did she play it and kind of look at you like, come on, this.
No, I didn't get too much of that, but she didn't want me to watch too much because she felt like pressured if I was watching her play.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah, and she didn't get the right ending, so she was a bit annoyed. She started over a few times to get the ending she wanted.
So on that note, releasing a game called Detroit and having lived in Detroit at one point in your life, what is that like coming round robin like that?
Is that weird or what?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it has nothing to do with me. So like sometimes in production, I like to say, yeah, the Detroit is like the people in the team, like the new people, like, yeah, I'm the inspiration for Detroit. You know, but actually it's like it really has nothing to do with me. And like at one point, like in the middle of production, I was talking to David Cage, the boss of Quantic Dream, and I think he knew I live in the U.S. because he knew I spoke fluently English, but I'm like, yeah, I grew up in Detroit. And he's like, what, really? And it was really weird. But yeah, it's a strange thing, and it's a really weird coincidence, but it has nothing to do with me.
That's interesting. They could have used you as a consultant, I guess, right?
Well, like in the artistic team, the people who knew I grew up there, so some of them did ask me stuff. But I mean, mostly, honestly, I was like from 5 till 10 years old, and I was living in the suburbs, so it wasn't exactly like I didn't really know Detroit, the city, so well. So,
gotcha. Yeah, it's interesting out here because you could live, you know, 20 miles away from Detroit, and for some odd reason, they still call it Metro Detroit. You're in the Metro Detroit area, and it's like, no, you're nowhere near. You're 20 miles away.
Yeah, you've never been in the city, but
right, yeah. Exactly. Like you're in this beautiful area. So, Detroit, unfortunately, now, as I'm sure you already know, has been, you know, areas of it are just dilapidated, I guess. So,
yeah.
But I guess that's the basis for the game, right? Is that that's sort of exploring how bad Detroit can get, right?
Yeah, the idea was to like. Basically, like this Detroit starting off again with robotics instead of cars. So yeah, to have a contrast between like really poor areas and areas that have been completely remade because of all the new money coming in.
And it's such a cool idea, and it's almost predicting the future a little bit because we are doing the self-driving car stuff over here as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it doesn't seem unfeasible, I would say.
Yeah, hopefully that's how it turns out, because it would be unfortunate. That city was pretty great. So
yeah, it's pretty unfortunate where it's gone now. But yeah, I'm hoping it definitely bounces back. And hey, if it's robots that's gonna do it, I'm in.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Well, you know what? Hey, let's talk about guinea pigs. Because now this is a thing now, right? Tell us about your guinea pigs.
So they're right behind me. So like me and my wife, we had a guinea pig like a few years back. And we've always wanted to, since he died, we've always wanted to take some animals again. And we thought about taking a dog maybe. But we ended up taking two more guinea pigs. And so we've had them for about a year. And yeah, they're pretty great. They're fun little animals. They're noisy and they're always chatting and always jumping about. It makes them it makes the apartment alive. So yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know if you can pick them up on the mic. Their names. Well, their names are very French sounding. I mean, they're going to sound weird in English, maybe.
Speak French to me.
I think they'll sound okay in English. So one is called Fufu. Yeah, because he kind of looks like a ferret. So, and the other one's called Bun Bun because he kind of looks like a bunny. So we have two guinea pigs, and they're both called after like other rodent animal names, which is weird.
Or Bunny Fufu. Like, I don't know if you're Eddie Murphy fan. Bunny and Fufu.
I never thought of that. Yeah.
Bun Bun Fufu. I love it.
I didn't remember that. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, we actually had two guinea pigs when we were growing up, and they just squeaked constantly. You know, they just always, no matter what, it's like you even like peek your head in the room, they're like, "Wee!" You just go nuts.
Yeah, they're pretty noisy. Yeah, it's fun.
Well, Bal, I only have one more question for you here because we're getting close to our time. Just wanted to ask you, because I try to ask everybody this type of question at the end, but you're somebody who is not only involved in the Quake community, but someone who's actually been pretty successful in their professional life working in games. So what sort of advice would you give to somebody who's kind of new to it and maybe wants to get into that industry?
Well, for the art side, because the industry is pretty huge and there's like a billion different jobs in it. I mean, can you like be a coder or be a music guy or sound guy or whatever. So there's like so many different jobs in this industry. But for like pure artistic stuff, I guess the most important is really to like not to concentrate too much on the tools, but to concentrate on the art. And so to make sure to have a good like traditional background in like traditional arts and stuff like that. And then just to like work on it as much as possible and post it online and get feedback. And that's the only way to get better, really. Just work, and don't hesitate to share it with other people and to get lots of people to tell you that you suck and that your stuff is really ugly. That's what's important.
Life goals.
True. Yep.
And it's the same for mapping, really.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I went to art school for 2 years, and that was one of the first things we learned was the art director was like, "This is all crap," and he knocked everybody's stuff on the floor, and he's like, "This is what you need to get used to."
Yeah, I didn't answer the question Dumbtruck asked earlier about like how the work I've done in like 3D art and like modern game design affects like work on Quake. And actually it's all linked, and I think that's a really nice feeling to have, is that when I started like learning traditional art, then when I went back to mapping, even just the fact of like learning to draw the human body and stuff like that, it's all linked, and it's really interesting to see that the shapes you learn to see and to recreate in one medium can like transform in another medium and are still relevant. So if you get better in one artistic domain, it's almost sure that it's going to increase the quality of your work in all the other artistic domains you could be working on, and that's really great.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dumbtruck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Dumbtruck_DS.
We're talking to Bal, who currently works at, maybe you've heard of it, Quantum Dream in France.
Quantic Dream.
Quantic Dream. I always want to say Quantum.
I know, me too.
Like Quantum Leap. So.
Right.
Quantic Dream. I probably said that during the podcast too.
You did a couple times, but you could kind of going back and forth between them, but that's all right. That's okay.
Just like a drunk.
You know, that's know that one. Aha. Yep. I'm sorry if I stepped on you there. I'm just trying to be goofy.
No, you didn't. Once I edit it, you won't even notice it. So
okay, you just chop me out. It's fine.
No.
Just get rid of me.
That's good. You watch by episode 10. I'll be like, yeah, just watch it. I'm going to edit this. It'll be fine. And I just completely take you out of the whole episode. Like,
one quick thing, guys, I'm going to take off my headset and get my, now I'm starting to heat up, RC. So I'm going to take off my sweater real quick. Hang on for a sec.
It's not turning into a porno, is it?
I'm going to take my pants off now.
Things are starting to heat up. So if I take my pants off. That's okay. We're not saying anything terrible about you specifically.
Back in business.
Woo. Pants off, shirt off. We're ready to go.
Yep. Gun show showing now. I'm all good.